Good morning. I'm Jim.
And I'm Ryan.
And this is the Concept Crucible Podcast.
Episode 4.
4.
We've made it this far.
We have.
Yeah, that's
There's
awesome.
No going back now.
Well, yeah.
Also, they're already released. Unfire that particular gun. But no, today we want to talk about Dungeons & Dragons.
D&D. Yeah, we're going to let our nerd flag, you know.
In case wave
a little bit.
In case you couldn't have figured it out from the Cthulhu in the background.
Yeah.
For those of you listening, there's a Cthulhu in the background. There's another one behind Ryan.
Yeah. Or us talking about karaoke last time.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're a little nerdy.
A little.
Yeah. We'll explore a little bit more over the podcast. So.
But yeah, we want to talk about what D&D is and what it's like from both the perspective of the dungeon master and as the player. And what makes it good and why you should play it. And this goes with, I mean, we use D&D as an example. I've played a lot of other different role-playing games. I highly recommend those, too, for the most part. Mm-hmm. But D&D is sort of the game that we both have in common. Mm-hmm. But start with an icebreaker. If you were a D&D character, what class would you want to be?
What would I want to be, or what would I be? Because
what would you want to be?
What would I want to be? Well, I mean, everybody wants to be cool.
Arguably.
And I am admittedly not as familiar with the expanded classes from all the other books.
That's okay.
I'm usually just a core rule book kind of guy.
Yeah.
So I would say if I had to pick a class, I would probably want to be... You know, I'd probably want to be a cleric. I know before we started recording I said maybe something like a sorcerer, but I think cleric because they do strike a nice balance between... you know, the physical body, they a lot of times they're definitely not the best melee fighters, but they can tap into really interesting divine spells.
True.
Depending on which way they align themselves with the gods, they get access to certain kinds of spells and certain kinds of schools of spells. But I think it's not boring, it's mm-hmm. incredibly versatile, and then just it's fun to have a kind of you can play around with a rigid like theological background, but you're not bound up by some of the rules that players get stuck into when you're thinking of other characters that are rigidly rule-bound, like monks and paladins and whatnot. I mean, when you play them, when you don't know how to play the monks and the paladins, it can get really boring.
Yeah.
You're a little bit more free with clerics.
Fair enough.
So that's if I could be a character, I would probably want to be a
What
cleric.
Would you actually be, though?
I'd probably be closer to a fighter, just kind of a very jack of all trades, very adaptable, but not particularly good at anything unless I put a lot of time into it. I'm just kind of like a large meathead that's just smart enough to get by on cleverness, but not smart enough to actually do anything noteworthy.
So basically, you would actually like work security at a bar.
Yeah, I'd probably work security
Dungeons
at a bar,
and
I'd probably do a little bit of research for a gambling lab. And then, you know, when I get bored with that, I go and do research for a college. And, you know, kind of like that. I think that's what I would be, is I think I'd just be a generic. I get one extra feat when I'm at my creation. And then beyond that, I don't really get anything cool. So, how about you, Jim? What would you want to be?
I would want to be a wizard. Because wizards are awesome.
Because they have cool hats.
They have cool hats and cool beards. And I'm fascinated by the nature of wizards.
That they're never late.
Well, they're never late. But actually, the wizard I always think of isn't Gandalf. It's Merlin from T.H. White's Once and Future King. Because he doesn't do... Like, he does magic not by, you know, casting spells and slinging fireballs. He affects people by having a deep understanding of human beings. And so he gives people small gifts, or he understands what matters to people, or he... I mean, and it seems like magic, but it's really just paying attention and being careful with relationships. But also, I mean, in D&D, I could do that and throw fireballs and mess people up. I mean, I'd be a little frail, but I'd be very smart. And, I mean, with the right spells, I would be nigh invulnerable.
Magic missile.
Magic missile.
Magic missile.
I have... Actually, that's not true. My wizard in Ryan's game casts magic missile all the time. But, damn it. I was about to say, I always ban that school. But that's a story for another time. But yeah, I guess I would want to be a wizard, but what I would actually be is probably a bard. which is like a faux wizard, and again, comes with some of that understanding of human beings, but I mean, I tell stories, I write, I play music, I, you know, like to wander around.
I think you're selling yourself short. I mentioned this before we started recording that in the context of headshots from the heart, I mean, like, a bard, one of the useful features of a bard is the inspirational side of their abilities. They're able to inspire confidence and inspire people to do really wonderful things. And it is a kind of magic. And, like, you know what? All things considered, like, headshots was a bit of, like, it was your idea, and then you got the right people in the room to help you out. I mean, you're really modest about it, though. And, like, I'm not just saying that to pump you up. I'm saying, like, you really did inspire these people to come together and do this interesting thing. They have their own stories to tell. You know, Matt has his own story and everybody else. But, like, you said, you know, hey, why don't we do this really cool thing because we like to do this. So, like, we like to play games. Why don't we try to do some good about that?
I think the real story of Headshots is that I was inspired by them, but I'll take it.
Yes.
So I guess Bard would be my go-to. I mean, as much as maybe I would like Barbarian for the simpler thing, but it's not well optimized is my problem.
No, it's really hard to do anything when you can't read as a Barbarian.
Yeah, there is that additional investment.
Yeah.
I'd multi-class.
Yeah.
Anyway.
We're probably getting a little ahead of
ourselves. Well, we're getting a little technical here. I mean, what is D&D at its core?
It's a dice-based role-playing game.
Yeah.
It's heavily involved in storytelling and world-building. It's really hard. I still struggle with it. I've been playing it off and on for 10 years, and I have a hard time explaining it to people, because usually it's like, well, do you play with a board? Well, sometimes when we want to visualize a battle, or we want to visualize the encounter and be able to keep track of the relative positions of our characters, but you don't really need a board. You just need, you know, your character sheet, and you need a little bit of imagination.
Yeah.
That's kind of it.
So I wrote my thesis on D&D, part of it. And that's how much of a nerd I am. I wrote part of my thesis on D&D. But I describe it as a game that is strategy and theater mixed together. And they're intertwined to the point where they cannot be pulled apart. In D&D, it's a cooperative game. All the players but one play a character, a person who is distinct from themselves. As opposed to a lot of games, like a video game, like World of Warcraft, where you can play a character, but usually it's just your avatar. It's a representation of you in a fantasy world. In D&D, you want to have a character, someone who has different values, someone who has a different outlook or a different personality. And that's where the theater part comes in. But that person is also going to fight monsters and overcome traps and overcome challenges. And you're going to adjudicate that with, as Ryan mentioned, dice rolls, sometimes using a grid for fights. But I mean, the core of it is that it's a resource management strategy kind of game. And you can't pull these two things apart, because I mean, if you just have theater, well, you can have a really interesting game like that, and I've done a lot of role playing using just theater or just improv, but it's not Dungeons and Dragons, because there's no strategy element, there's no risk, and there's no reward from that risk. But at the same point, if you just pull away the theater and use the strategy part, I mean, it's a war game. It's a tactical miniatures battle, and there are some great versions of those. I'm a really big fan of 40K and War Machine, but they're not D&D because you don't care why you're fighting.
And the point is to win.
Yeah, the point is to win, but even in D&D, when the point is to win the fight, you care about why you're in that fight.
Yeah, the fight's always in service of some higher goal or a further end. It's more, yeah, ideal. I mean, sometimes you just have to go into a mountain, slay a dragon to get treasure,
and then take its pants.
Yeah, and then when they make a movie about it, they make it into a very noble pursuit of winning back your land. I'm talking about The Hobbit.
I know.
Yes.
A, Tolkien predates D&D.
Yes.
B, they actually did want to win back their land. Thorin is the king of Lonely Mountain.
Yes, but really, the point of The Hobbit was totally
the also treasure. The treasure. Yeah. I mean, that certainly doesn't hurt.
But anyways, yeah, no, the point of the point of the fights is usually less to do with the surface level killing or winning something, and it's more to do in service of some higher end.
Yeah, I mean, even if that higher end is treasure. Like, it doesn't have to be a nobler end. Just something that exists outside the context of that fight or that challenge. And that's where the story comes from. But I said all players but one because the last player is the dungeon master or DM or I have a long history of contention with the words with the term dungeon master, but I will use it for the purposes of this podcast because I'm not going to get upset and freak out about nomenclature on the podcast.
You don't like to be a dungeon master?
No, I like to be a game moderator. I don't think of myself as the master of anything, and I think that the game happens in lots of places that aren't dungeons.
I suppose. I mean. Yeah,
I don't like the hubris that comes with the notion of mastery. But again, it's a technical term in D&D, and for the purposes of this of today's podcast, we will just go with DM because I'm not going to be a giant pain in the ass.
I think you're overthinking it a bit.
That is kind of what I do. I have a whole blog where I overthink D&D.
TPK?
Yes.
We should put a link down.
We totally will. You can find it at tpkblog.com.
Yeah, just in case you didn't come here through your blogs or Wootsuit.
So. Sometimes people who aren't me watch these videos.
Yeah.
But, and that's your DM. And your DM's job is to create and manage the world. The best worlds, I think, are created by everyone, sort of cooperatively. But it is chiefly your DM's job to manage that world. The other players, their characters are going to interact with it. And it's the DM's job to give them feedback on that. So if Ryan's character goes into the bar and he, you know, jams his axe, because you're a fighter, into the bar top and says, "Give me a beer!" Well, the DM is going to have the bartender react to that. And in a way that might be cowering in fear and coughing up an unlimited amount of whiskey, or it might be calling for the guards.
I just drew in my mind a really interesting parallel with philosophy.
Hit me.
Essentially, the Dungeon Master, the DM, is Barclay's God. When you blink, when you shut your eyes, the DM is ultimately what keeps the world going in the background.
Fair enough. Yeah. No, I can see that.
Yeah.
Stretching
it a little.
No, bit. I don't think you're stretching it at all. So to give a little bit of philosophical context for that, Barclay was a I want to say 17th century philosopher, 18th century philosopher.
Yeah.
Who didn't believe in the physical world. We'll link to his Stanford page down here.
Yeah.
But he didn't believe in the physical world. And he actually has some really good arguments for why you should not believe in the physical world.
Well, it might even go too far to say he didn't believe in the physical world. He didn't believe in anything beyond the senses.
Yeah.
It's really the technical, like, just to get a little nitpicky there, nothing beyond the senses for him could be known for sure. All we have is what is stopped at the senses, the way what you can feel about the world, what you can see about the world.
Yeah.
All those ideas coming into your mind, once you get to the level of the senses, you can't go past it.
Yeah, and he saw that. You know, this is the kind of thing that would lead you to worry and lose a lot of sleep. And he solved it by saying that the thing that makes everything consistent and the reason why the world isn't just totally wonky and why everybody's senses seem to line up. I mean, if I am, you know, poking Ryan and he feels poking and I feel poking as a poker, then, I mean, we have consistency in these things and we can communicate that consistency. But Barclay thinks that he said that the thing that holds that all together is God. And God makes sure that everything is sort of cool, and so you can go about your life without worrying that everything will just disappear one day.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an apt analogy for what the DM does, in one sense. I mean, the DM also exists to do things like make rule calls.
All right.
And uses a lot of sort of background management. It is ostensibly the DM's job to help provide the adventure. He does not create the entire story. I mean, that rests on the choices of the players. But he does, and I say he because I am a habitual GM, or DM rather. But, the DM, they don't create the whole story. but they create the context in which the story happens. Mm-hmm. And I love doing that. I've been blogging about DMing for about 2 years now, and I have been running games for about 13 or 14, and it is so much fun. I love world building. I love interpreting people's reactions. I always tell people that writers torment their own characters, and they have a lot of fun torturing their own characters. I am not a writer. I am a DM. I like torturing other people's characters. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to actually, you know, do that. I just have to give them the opportunity to do it to themselves. And they will happily do so because it tells a good story. Because it is more fun to have a character who is flawed or who is tortured, tormented by something than it is to have a character who just moves unscathed throughout the world. Mm-hmm. But that is pretty much what D&D is like for me as a DM, is I spend a lot of time constructing things and people navigate them, and sometimes they don't, sometimes they walk away. And I try and facilitate those choices as best I can. And I cackle maniacally. A lot. And I play all the characters, which is super fun.
Yeah. No, some of the stories that you've been telling me about your characters, and just how much fun you have with taking the little bits of story hooks and whatnot that they put out, and then just purely running with it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's partly that my players, I've been doing this for a long time, and I like working with new players, but they all, I try and work really hard to earn their trust, because, I mean, a player only controls one character, and they're sort of tossed and turned, and they have to trust me that I'm not gonna, you know, mess with them or that kind of thing, or their choices will remain their choices, and the foreseeable consequences will remain the foreseeable consequences, and that I am following the rules even though they can't see me follow the rules. And I try really hard to earn that trust, and the result is that I get a lot of leeway for what I can do. If I decide to make up elements of somebody's background that they didn't fill in, they're usually okay with that, and if I think that they might not be, I usually try and negotiate it with them in advance.
Yeah. Well, and good D&D is largely a constant discovery. It's and constantly enriching the world. I mean, you can have a straightforward game where the DM is pretty much leading you down a garden path story. There's nothing wrong with it per se. I mean, it all depends on what kind of experience you want to have as a player. Yeah. I mean, if you want nothing more than a pre-constructed dungeon that your characters have been essentially MacGuffined into for one reason or another, you know, there's nothing wrong with going down.
You have a lot of fun.
You can have a lot of fun busting down doors, you know, trying to avoid traps and trying to avoid, you know, monsters and whatnot that are coming after you solely to get some prize, treasure, something at the end of it. And then you all go home.
The prize is usually ladies.
Well, sometimes. I mean, actually, you know what? That's never.
You never had ladies at the center of the maze. You're always like, ladies are nice because they're really hard to put in a bag and haul away.
No, so yeah.
Treasure, you're just like, oh, treasure doesn't talk back.
Well, I mean, in terms of interest in other characters, I've only ever been interested in I've only ever played one character who's ever been interested in another character romantically once. It was an NPC, it was a princess, you know. It was the very first character I ever played, and the princess got kidnapped, and for some reason I was role-playing it such that I was into the princess, and then when she got kidnapped and dragged into an alternate dimension of something or other,
ladies at the center of the dungeon.
But that was once. I've played many characters since then, but yeah, my character became an alcoholic, and then decided to continue adventuring after her to go rescue her. I'm totally the nice guy of, you know, like, I'm going to go rescue her, even though I fell in love with the princess at the distance because, you know, all princesses are beautiful. And my heterosexual character was totally into that, and that I would show her that I loved her and stuff like that. But
he was a super nice guy.
I was in high school.
It's hilarious. We made a rule at the beginning of this, which was no character stories, and I knew that we would break that rule. I was just curious as to see who would be the first to do it.
Yeah, I broke it. I'm sorry.
But no, I mean, you've been playing for a while. Like, yeah. One of the things about being the DM is I rarely get to play. Mm-hmm. I get so used to being the DM, and everyone else gets so used to having me be the DM that I don't usually get the chance to play. To the point where I wrote an article about how to be the DM, mm-hmm. how to be a DM and play. And rule one was shut up, because I needed to not make rule calls, and I needed to take a step out of that role mm-hmm. to let the actual DM fill it, because it was his space. And so I found it to be a real challenge. But I mean, you've been playing for a while. Mm-hmm. So what is it like as a player? What do you do as a player? What is that kind of thing?
I'm a terrible role player. I've come to discover in the 10 years, I still have not found a way for me to consistently portray a character. And my characters, I don't know what the male equivalent of a Mary Sue is, but my characters in a large part tend to default into
Larry Stew.
Maybe a Larry
Stew. No, that's totally what it is.
Is that okay? So my characters are largely a Larry Stew, where sometimes I put a little bit of extra effort in there when I'm not being particularly lazy, and they'll have some sort of defining characteristic that'll make, like, they become their own thing. But that very rarely happens. And there's a couple reasons for that. One, I'm lazy, but two, most of the campaigns I've been involved with haven't really lasted a long time. I've only been in two long-term games in the 10 years that I've played. So a lot of these characters don't really have time to be fleshed out. So my adventuring is kind of a proxy for doing cool stuff. And so that's why when we were talking about this and preparing for the show, I often don't get a lot of excitement out of the political elements of the campaign. Mm-hmm. So when our characters have to go and gather intelligence in town, or when we have to figure out some sort of conspiracy of, you know, like how this syndicate is interacting with the city in this way, they're interesting, and it makes for a varied storied experience, but it doesn't really fulfill the itch when I play D&D. I really do like dungeon crawling and adventuring and seeing new monsters and leveling up so I can have new powers and finding new artifacts and whatnot. You know, when my character got a ring of sustenance, boom, I was so happy about that.
You don't have to eat anymore.
I don't have to eat, and I only have to sleep 2 hours. So, and as a spellcaster who has to pray every morning or every day kind of deal for my powers, you know, only having to sleep for 2 hours and then having access to your spells. I mean, I do want to become the very best, like no one ever was, kind of deal, right? So as a player who's really crappy at role playing, my experience tends to be I really enjoy the adventuring side of it, even if my character sucks at the adventuring side of it. I mean, I have fallen into so many poop rivers in the sewers because I cannot pass a climb check or a balance check to save my life. And so I spend a lot of time swimming in the sewers because my character sucks for dexterity. Oh, just so bad.
Yeah, I mean, D&D, there's a tendency to... So a friend of mine actually just... He wants to start a game. He asked me very recently, he said, how do I explain D&D to people who have only really played World of Warcraft? You know, how do I want to say it's like World of Warcraft, but and I puzzled over explaining that, because D&D has a relation to all other games. D&D recently celebrated its 40th anniversary.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations, Gygax. Yeah. Love you, man. We
should pour one out for him.
Well, in my group, side note, my group, we like to make stupid Pokemon references, and one time we imagined what Gary Gygax would be as a Pokemon, or what his noise would be. So pretty much, since he says his own name, he's Gygax for some reason.
That's going to be my new phone sound.
There you go.
But no, like, D&D has a relationship with all kinds of other games. There are D&D video games like Baldur's Gate mm-hmm. and Neverwinter Nights. There are D&D board games. Mm-hmm. That came out 3-4 years ago, I think, and there have been proceeding. It's gone through a bunch of different editions and rules changes and things like that, usually for the better.
And Magic.
Magic is not a D&D board game, but it is very similar.
Magic was created so that D&D players would have something to do between game sessions. I should look that up, and if it's true, we'll make sure to put a link down below.
If it's not there, you'll know it's not.
But I really hope that like this was not just a legend, or this is not my buddy trolling me, but this is something we've talked about before. That because I mean, from an evidentiary point of view, both games happen to be produced and sold by Wizards of the Coast. D&D is a Wizards of the Coast thing. Magic is done by Wizards of the Coast. I mean, like, it's conceivable that it was done that. Like,
at some point... It is conceivable, but I think it's unlikely because D&D was not created by Wizards. They bought it and started around the same time. Yeah. So, maybe, but...
And both have the satanic element of people not trusting it.
D&D, not Satan's game, no matter what your parents in the 80s might tell you. But no, I mean, the answer to what is D&D like when compared to other games is it isn't like any other game. I mean, in World of Warcraft, you are constrained by what the world will let you do. Even if you play on a role-playing server and you play a character with their own feelings and emotions and that kind of thing, you're still going to go on the same quests as all your friends. You're still going to seek the same gear as all your friends. You're going to have the same powers as all the people who are the same class. You're going to have mostly the same experiences that they have in terms of gameplay. And that's, I mean, I played World of Warcraft off and on for like 5 years, and I really enjoyed the time that I spent there most of the time. But so it's certainly not a bad game, but it's definitely a different game than D&D. Same with even D&D based video games like Neverwinter Nights, or the newest one, which is Neverwinter, their new MMO. I mean, it's fun, but again, you're constrained by what the world will let you do, and that's just how video games work. I mean, it's influenced tons of other games. I mean, and the same with board games is you have a sort of limited set and a limited amount of time. Probably my favorite D&D style board game is Lords of Neverwinter, where you play as a lord of a city and you sort of manipulate adventurers into going on and doing tasks for you, and then you get victory points based on the tasks that you've completed. There's some interesting subtleties there. They played it on tabletop once, and we'll link that down below because it's super funny. But I mean, D&D isn't really like that either because it persists after one session. I mean,
you can choose to stop.
But you can also have it continue on. You know, if you wrap up your game of Lords of Neverwinter, the next time you show up to play Lords of Neverwinter, you start all over again. D&D, you don't have to do that. You can keep playing and keep telling more stories.
I'm trying to think of a good analogy. The only thing I can think of is something like world building, you know. You set up all the pieces, you set up the rules of the world, and then you just, like, give it the first push. And then it keeps going according to the rules of the world that has been set up initially. I mean, you can change it, of course.
Yeah.
But it sets up a world, and then once you put it into motion, it has the ability to continuously go under its own power. Wow. The players and the game master. And
the power of the players. But yeah, I know. I understand what you mean. I think it's a pretty good analogy.
Yeah.
So one of the things we wanted to talk about is, I mean, we've already talked about how there's a lot of different ways to play. But I think there are some essentials that make any game a good game. And we, before the show, we threw this around and we came up with a couple. Ryan, what was yours?
I mean, in addition to rocket-powered triceratops that will kill you if you leave the party. One thing that really makes it fun for me, and you can really only appreciate this in longer-standing games, is a sense of continuity within the world. When events from earlier in the game or from previous experiences or previous quests make reappearances. So, I mean, it could be something as simple as a character that you once met as a one-off appears somewhere else, and then they, you know, you can interact with them in new ways. Or within the same quest, you know, they pop up at different times and they can either help you or give you information. And it could just be the DM simply finding a way of conveying information simply to you. But I like those, I like that attention to detail because it makes the world feel real, and it makes it easier to live in when you can believe that things persist when you're not in that area. You know, once you've encountered this dungeon and you walk away from it, you're probably never going to return to it. And yet something about that dungeon or something about that experience or that encounter or that one NPC that you chose not to, to let die or something carries forward and impacts the game in the future.
I actually had a group return to a dungeon once. They colonized it. It was an underground city, and they're like, we have a bunch of refugees. We're just going to move them down here. It's cool. They can see in the dark. It was a really good time. I had no idea, but they were just like, we're right by that underground city we found. Why don't we just put them down there?
Yeah.
They'll be out of harm's way. And I was like, wow, that's a really good idea.
It takes a lot of effort to do that, though, on the part of the players and the DM. You really have to either have a good memory or take meticulous notes in order to faithfully recreate it when you go back to it.
I take lots and lots of notes.
Yeah, and draw maps and whatnot. So. Yeah.
Oh, no, it's super helpful. So my thing, I think, is definitely intertwined with the notion of continuity. But the thing that makes a good game for me, from the DM perspective, is autonomy. The game exists around players and their characters making choices. I mean, characters, you want your players to make choices that are consistent with your character's values, but you want those choices to matter. I mean, you want them. I mean, the thing with continuity is not just the notion that, oh, this is a neat way of doing it. It's that those choices we made in the past, or that our past characters made in this world, still have consequences. They matter in a way that is larger than us. And I mean, autonomy has everything to do with that. As the DM, you were empowered to manipulate the world in all kinds of ways, and it's really easy to let that get out of hand. It's really easy to sort of decide that, you know, you are the author and they are the audience, because you know everything that's going on in the world, and there's really cool things going on. You just want to show them to these players. But I mean, it's easy to forget that it needs to be driven by their choices, because A, there are more of them than you. But more importantly, like I mean, it's the story of their characters. It's not the story of the world. It's the story happens when their characters bump into the world, and things come out of that. And players, I think, once they realize that they have that kind of autonomy, I mean, it can be liberating. It can be paralyzing. It can be stressful. I have had a number of players over the years complain to me that my game is stressful because they know that their choices have consequences. And I try and make sure that the consequences from those choices are relatively clear, so that when they see them, they can be like, this happened because of a choice that we made. And if it is something bad, it happened because of a choice that they made. And I mean, maybe they knew about it when they made the choice and maybe they didn't, but they can see the connection, and that connection provides, I think, some of that continuity.
Mm-hmm.
So I try really hard to, I mean, respecting people's autonomy is just good life advice too. But
no.
But it, especially as a DM, when you're sort of in a privileged position, where you have more knowledge and sort of essentially more power, it becomes even more important to respect that. And I think you get much better results when you respect it versus when you take it for granted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a little bit of extra effort to not default to just power hungry or whatever, but it makes it for a much more enriching experience. Yeah. I mean, the games are much more interesting, they're more lively, a lot more fun. Yeah.
It's also, I think, what makes D&D different from theater. I mean, that's the usual comparison is, oh, it's like a strategy game, or oh, it's like theater. Mm-hmm. But in theater, you follow a script. Mm-hmm. Now, in improv theater, you don't, but improv theater is sort of a special case. But it, like in a play with a story, you follow a script. But in D&D, your players make their own script. They make their own choices, and they want to feel like they're making their own choices, because who doesn't? I mean, but that allows them to be responsible for what happens. If you're just an actor, if you are an actor who plays Hitler, you don't have any real agency over what, you know, Hitler does in the play, because you are just an actor. Whereas if you are playing Hitler in a D&D game, this is probably not a terribly good example at this point, but and you make the same, you have to make the same choices that Hitler made in order and in order to be responsible for those outcomes. You are, and I mean, you're consciously making those choices. I think I could ramble on about this forever, and I will happily do so on the blog. But I think that definitely continuity and autonomy are two things that make for a great game, no matter what kind of role-playing game you are playing. And also, again, just generally good life advice.
Yeah. Well, and like, you know, if you play D&D, one, like that.
Which you should.
Yeah, no, you can tell we're filming this at night and I'm tired, but if you play D&D and you have things about your game that you find interesting and that make the experience, tell us a little bit about it in the comments below. We like to hear what you do about your D&D games.
Yeah.
And what draws you towards it.
I'm always looking for advice and new ideas.
Yeah.
I guess the final question we wrote down is just why play? And I'm of the opinion that a good game of D&D will improve anyone. We're all improved by that. And I love working with new players. And I love finding a group of people who tell me that they are not creative, that they hate writing, that they hate theater, and that they hate math. And having them have a really good time doing what is essentially improv theater and statistics for like 4 hours a week. And they tell stories, and they get into it, and they really love it. And sometimes they don't, and sometimes they do. But I work really hard to, I mean, because it can be a really challenging game sometimes. There's a lot of nitpicky rules in some editions. There are some rules light ones too. But all in all, that is the feeling that I love, because it sort of makes them better. D&D has definitely improved me in a lot of ways. What about you? Why play?
So beyond the cool things that they keep coming out with in the different expansions of the books and the rules and whatnot, the philosopher of me, or philosopher in me, I really like...
We had philosophers for dinner earlier.
Yeah, it's so tasty. Hot sauce. No, I... When it comes to D&D, or any kind of open-ended world construction, I like that it affords you the ability to explore things and role play it out that you would not necessarily do in real life. And I'm not talking about, you know, it allows you to role play horrible things, although it can. But I'm just talking about you're able to, if you put enough effort into it, you can kind of inhabit somebody else and you can walk a little bit in their shoes and you can try to work out things about the world and test out consequences.
Mm-hmm.
That you wouldn't be able to see otherwise. I mean, you see this a lot in good literature when they use metaphor and whatnot to explore social issues, and you know, going through and criticizing things that you wouldn't otherwise be able to do. And so I like that about D&D, that it just affords you that ability to test out ideas and test out these consequences. Because I mean, the way you run your games, or the way you describe running your games, where you give characters choices and they really have to choose between something that they would really like, but at the cost of some horrible outcome, you know? Like,
sometimes.
Sometimes, you know.
Sometimes they just want a sandwich, and they just get a sandwich.
Yes, and sometimes they have a horrible relic that they have to give up to save everybody
else. Well, sometimes a sandwich is a horrible relic.
I think Freud may have been a good D&D player. So.
No, I the way I think about it is Mike Merles, who is one of the lead designers on Dungeons & Dragons now, and who admittedly is a man with whom I agree very little. No, I, like, when it comes to a design point of view, he and I have a lot of opposing viewpoints. Mm. But he said in an interview once that D&D is the only game that gets more fun the more you play it. Any other game, video games, board games, things like that, eventually you will master them. Eventually you will get bored of them because they will be the same thing over and over again. But D&D, the limit is your imagination. I mean, you can keep telling stories. There are people who have been running characters for 25 years in a whole ton of different editions, and they just keep going because they want to see how that character's story ends. And there's some people who never run the same character twice, and they just constantly, you know, start over and start over because they really like starting. And you can, starting over isn't a punishment. It's a chance to do something new and to tell a different story in a different context. And if you get bored of that context, you do a different one. And if you get bored of that world, you make a new world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is that going to be the last word then?
I think it might be. If you want to see more D&D, we do live stream D&D on Wootsuit Riot every 2 weeks, mm-hmm. Thereabouts. Fitting with some of my my players' schedules. But so yeah, that's usually Sundays at 2 o'clock. And we schedule the streams in advance, so you can check that out. And you can actually see me run games. It's somewhat more interesting. But, well, I mean, I will admit, as a person who enjoys watching other people play D&D, that there are parts of that that are a bit arduous, especially in a live stream.
Hmm.
But, yeah, we do it in Hangouts, so we can chat. And I would love to hear what you have to say in the comments.
Yes, definitely drop us a line in the comments. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, so we will see you later. I am Jim.
And I am Ryan. Signing off. Stay awesome.